Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello, London. Welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who thinks he might have just had a Backstreet scan. It's Richard Herring. Thank you. Oh, you're amazing. What a lovely noise to make. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to the bloke who threw glitter over Keir Starmer to make him look like a magical genie who can solve all of our problems, rather than highlight whatever the fuck the protest was actually about. That bloke calls it Rahulastapas. I think you all should. Yeah, this one's going out this week, which is quite unusual, so I can do topical stuff. So let's see what's in the news. Okay, no, we're not going to do... not much to joke about, so we're not. I'll tell you what's been going on. I don't like to talk about it, but a couple of years ago, I had testicular cancer, and it's something I've mainly kept to myself, but I haven't exploited it anyway. But the good thing, one of the great things, if you're going to get cancer, get testicular cancer, madam. That's my advice to you, because one of the good things, it's easy to get rid of, and also they every year and every 6 months, really, they bring you in to check you're okay. So it's like, when you're my age, it's just like having a little free MOT... It's quite good. So I went in to the Lister Hospital, the fine Lister Hospital in Stevenage, to have my yearly my abdomen. You go in the total recall machine, and you have to put your hands above your head, and they do a thing where they put like a stent in your arm, and then they put iodine into your blood. They say that's to make the picture look better. But that sounds a bit hokey to me. But every time I've done it, they've said, "Now you might feel." Like during this, that you might feel like you've wet yourself, but you won't have wet yourself. And I never felt like I've wet myself. And I'm really just, every time I'm hoping, I hope it's this time. And what, you know, they can say that, but you might wet yourself, right? And then you think, oh, it's fine. I haven't wet myself. I think they just do it so you wet yourself. Just feel go, oh, I can just let go. Anyway, I went in and I went to the hospital and I sat in the waiting room. Then a guy came in and said, come with me. And we went out of the hospital into the courtyard outside, and there was like a van set up at the back with a scanner inside it. It was very Del Boy, I have to say. It didn't feel like really, just like it felt like the bloke coming, like, let's get one out and see if we can do it back a bit. So it felt, and then when it finished, it's a cannula you've got in your arm. Usually, every other time I've done this, you have to wait 30 minutes. We'll take that out in 30 minutes. He just went, yeah, take it out. I'm meant to take you back into the hospital, but it's raining. Just go in your car, sit in your car for 5 minutes. If you feel all right, you can go. So I don't know what would happen. So I don't know the results yet. So, you know, I might have full, and hopefully, another cancer, because, you know, 2 years work out of the first one, so... Fingers crossed, everyone. Fingers crossed. Keep checking yourself. If you find any problems, go to your doctors. They are fantastic, the NHS. And so thank you for looking at it. They were lovely, the boys, in the official van at the back. It was like a big caravan. It was nice. And while I'm talking about this, I'm saying this is going out now. The podcast of Can I Have My Ball Back is continuing, and it goes out on this Rallister feed on Mondays at the moment. Thank you. And there are three more episodes coming out over these 3 weeks. So do listen into that and spread the news about that. The paperback of Can I Have My Ball Back. I told you I'd make... I mean, how much money, Dave, would you... If I said I'll give you $100,000, but I want one of your testicles... Would you go for it? Yeah, exactly. It's good, isn't it? It's a good deal. it's a good deal. I don't think what about the second one, though? Would you give up the second one? How would you? Yeah, another $100,000. $200,000 just right there. It's a deposit on a house, isn't it? Not the first time my testicles have left a deposit on a house either. So, sometimes, you know, you set yourself up and then you find a way through it, don't you? Sometimes you don't know what you're going to say. Anyway, the paperback of Can I Have My Ball Back, which is an excellent read, is out on. It's out now if you're listening at home. It's out on Thursday if you're in the audience. And I've just found out been sent the tour dates. I'm going to do a tour of Can I Have My Ball Back as well from April next year to July next year. So look out for that. Coming to the usual places. Quite a lot of places I've never been before that I don't think anyone will come and see me. So that's... we'll see. Back in Carlisle... Yeah, haven't been there for a long time, for good reason. So, see how that goes. Right, look, we're going to crack on. There's more there than I expected. So let's get talking to our guest. He is probably best known... Well, you know, he burst onto the scene, didn't he? Back in 1996, playing Greg Bamfield in Coronation Street. Remember? Then he just disappeared off the radar. What's he been doing... since then, and will Greg Bamfield be coming back after his one episode? I'm just desperate to find out about Greg Bamfield. Will you please welcome, he's best known as Greg Bamfield, but he's also called Simon Farnaby, ladies and gentlemen. It's Greg Bamfield. Hooray.
Thank you.
We've got a lot of ice there.
I mean, wow.
Greg Bamfield.
Extremely impressed at your research.
Yeah.
Because I thought you might try and introduce me as some obscure... and I thought I can probably trump him with Greg Bamfield. The Stag Night King. I think... Did you even have the Stag Night King? Because
I did find out he was the Stag Night King.
Yeah.
So was it Deirdre?
I mean, I cannot believe it. And when you started saying it, I was going, he's going to fucking... He's sick. He knows.
I could have gone for... I mean, this audience would have loved it if I'd gone for Dr. Schaefer from Top Coppers. Because Top Coppers is a recurring theme in this...
That's so obscure, even I forgot.
Okay, yeah. And you played a ventriloquist in Fat Slacks.
Oh, my God, yes, yeah. I did.
There's a lot to choose.
With Les Dennis.
There's a lot to choose.
But can I say, the Stag Night King, Greg Bamfield, that was my first ever acting job.
Yeah.
And Coronation Street, and it was a scene with Ken and Deirdre.
Yeah.
And the first Tracy Barlow, because she changed into another actress.
Yeah, that's the William Hartnell Tracy Barlow you worked with. Yeah. That's the...
I mean, I'm stunned.
Yeah. Are you hoping that there'll be a call one day?
We'd like Greg to come back. I'm still available.
Yeah.
They actually said, do you want to play a different part a bit later in my life? And I went, how can I come back as someone other than Greg Bamfield, Stag Night King? And yeah, anyway, thank you. Wow, that's, I mean, right. Amazing.
No, it's my.
I don't know where to go from Greg Banfield to Stag Night King.
You can just talk about it for the whole time.
I am good on Stag Nights as well.
Terrific. Well, look, there is so much to talk to you about. I am such a huge fan of yours. Well, you've done everything, and that's why it's going to be difficult to fit it all in. But let's talk about Ghost straight off the bat, because I.
Yeah. Someone's keen.
I've
just went yes.
I've just talked about Ghosts. I've just watched the final series. So there's one more episode to come, right? You've got a Christmas episode to come.
Yeah,
So, but the last series, I don't want to give anything away if anyone hasn't seen it, but I think it's sort of the perfect ending. I think it's you know, it's I don't want to say too much because if I say anything, it will spoil the ending. But it's not.
I know, it's tricky, isn't it, to know what to say. But I mean, you know, we try and give you a satisfactory end. Endings are really hard things to do because everyone has their own sort of view on how it should end. Yeah. Like, no one has a view on episode 3 of series 3. I think tonight what should happen is Julian should, you know, reveal that he's whatever, was a sheep farmer. I don't know, something. Because it's the middle of the thing and you're just going, oh, I wonder what. But at the end, you go, I think I know what should happen in the end. So hopefully people will just, or you'll all be disappointed. But it's not what you thought it would go. We'll see. I mean, it's weird because I've just started watching it with my daughter, who sort of claims to be disinterested. She's 9. And all her friends are just, oh, God. People are always saying how you're in Ghostbusters. And I'm like, who cares he's in Ghostbusters? I haven't even seen it. And now she's like, Dada, can I watch Ghosts? And it was really sweet. And we actually watched, just last night, we watched... In series 1, where Jim's family come to visit, you know, in the tree, or it might be up 2, and started crying because it'd been such a while, and you sort of involved in writing it, and you're watching, that was great. I think that really worked, and the reviews are good. And that's great, but you don't actually just sit and watch it. And I sat, and she went, "Dad, are you crying?" No, it's just so sweet. So it was really strange. Sort of, maybe it's just an emotional time because it's coming to an end.
Well, it must be. My daughter loves both the UK Ghosts and the US Ghosts. So I watch it all with her. It's, you know, she keeps on talking about people being sucked off, which, so thanks for that.
We haven't got to that bit yet. I'm usually pretty good at those. I'm not sure what I'll do. It's like she asked me what a prostitute was the other day, and I went... It's someone who kisses someone for money.
We had that.
And she went, right. Well, I get that. Don't be one. It's up to you. You can be one.
We have those discussions. I think the American one is racier. And like I've got, you know, because it's more about, and this could be an idea if you want to bring ghosts back. Just the next, have another series where all the ghosts just bang each other forever in each combination.
Wow.
Because it doesn't really happen. There's a little bit actually in the last series where you think about it, but there's no... I don't think they should be allowed. They can't have sex with each other because they're...
No.
Undo their trousers and then their trousers would be done up again, wouldn't they? Within a couple of seconds.
Also, it would make the afterlife better than real life.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what they're... So they're all banging each other in the American version.
I can't wait to die. get off with someone. Did they do that? Because I must confess, I haven't seen any of the US Ghosts.
That's good. Just take the money. Just take the money, Simon.
Well, we are exec producers, but, I mean, we all... Although I think the others have watched them now, but we did say let's not watch it because... you sort of, it's too easy to steal ideas. You know, we were still trying to think of our own ideas. And I did watch about 10 seconds of one where I think the Pat sort of character who's got the arrow through his neck gets an idea from a computer game. He gets obsessed with sort of Dungeons and Dragons and went, that's quite a good idea. That he like wants to play a computer game. And then I went, I've got to get it away from me.
Yeah.
Got to stop watching it. So,
well, there's one bit in the new series where... A safe suddenly appears in the basement of, or you know, in the which there is a whole thing in the American one of them discovering a secret entrance and there being a safe with another ghost inside it. So I thought, oh, maybe they're going to do that, but you did a different thing.
We did actually think about having sort of a cupboard. Someone brings a cupboard and there was a ghost in it. And then we went, yeah, but he didn't die on the... It would mean he died somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so he couldn't.
It's hard to know. Well, in the American one, someone dies in a car and then is in the car. So there's...
They die in a car accident,
and so then the car is what they're haunting. So when the car turns up at the manor, they're there, but then she goes off in the car.
So they just made up their own rules.
Made up their own rules. It's all about banging. It's all about... too much about banging. I like the fact there were more ghosts to begin with, but in the second series, I've got annoyed with how many fucking ghosts there are. There's too many ghosts.
I mean, it's odd because America has a big sort of history. But I look at... I don't know whether I'm allowed to say this, but anyway. Because they are going to make it in a few other countries, right. And so there's countries, there's like Germany or something, and you go, well, are you going to have a Nazi? I mean, that's just the way my brain works.
Yeah.
And you're just going, well, you don't necessarily have to have... And you go, well, I don't know how they can ignore that bit of history. and I'm just interested on how other countries, I can't wait to see that. And,
yeah.
And I think, I can't remember who else is doing, Spain's doing one.
Right,
and,
okay.
So it's just, because I guess it's, can travel around the world because every country has their own history and they can, so it's always different,
Yeah.
So, just thought that was a good observation.
It is. but it is such a wonderful show. It really is. And it's great. And it's so rare, I think, as a parent, to find a show. We watch The Simpsons together, and which is fun for the first 12 series, and then it's quite annoying. The new ones are quite bad. But it's quite rare to find something that, that you're sitting down and you're both... And she doesn't understand everything, but she understands most of it. And it's a really lovely thing to have. And look, let's talk about the book, and then we'll...
there's
so
much.
Copy of the...
You didn't know about this. You didn't know about
they didn't. I think they haven't seen a. They haven't seen an actual copy.
They haven't seen it.
They haven't
seen
the actual copy. I've read the whole thing.
Yeah.
It tells you everything about the ghost. It is lovely, and I was saying this backstage, but it's very easy with a successful TV show, and I think both you and I were comedy fans in the '70s and eighties.
Yeah.
And it's quite easy to go, let's have a soulless cash grab and put out a book that everyone's mum will buy them for Christmas.
Yeah.
So well done on achieving that.
Job done.
But, no.
It's
and lots of work has gone into this.
Joking aside. No, it was something we went, let's work really hard on it because it... And it's sort of a bit of a work ethic we have in the show as well. And we sort of, we could get other writers in or we could do, palm it off somehow. But we just had to do it ourselves. I mean, having said that, I've probably done the least amount of work anyway. But they just absolutely would not, and also you get, the publishers did a great job, but... They probably got sick of us going, that's not right, that doesn't look right, because you got loads of visuals and loads of...
Now, it's beautifully designed. Yeah. It is all these historical documents. And so
kudos for the other ghosts for not letting it be shit.
I think it's important because, I remember, and me and Stuart did a Fist of Fun annual, and we both remembered, the books that were great from, the Monty Python books were all pretty much great. The first Not That I've Got News book was great, and then they would just sort of put out Not the Royal Wedding and Not the, and just anything that came up, they would put out. We just had an image of, it would just be a book full of basically pictures of the character in a funny hat, a different funny hat each page with a bit of writing. So we wanted it to be dense with stuff that people could find, and that's what I think this book really has.
It was actually fun to go, what would Julian... I mean, I'm lucky because, Robin, because the idea of it is sort of archive and stuff you could find from history. And so it's basically like Alison sort of found as much as she can out about the ghost. And of course, Julian's got You know, so I thought while he's been suspended from Parliament, he probably would write a review of cars in the Times, like Clarkson. So there's an article called Full-Leaded, where he's like doing all these cars, and one of them's an electric car, and he's going, "This will never catch on." You know, yeah. If you want to go to the shops in a hairdryer, good luck to you. I like to smell burning stuff. And so it's just nice to. And there's one called Plain Sailing where he goes around the Aeolian Islands with his family, but just gets drunk with the skipper of the boat.
And James Hunt.
And then going, which celebrities would he bump into? Dennis Waterman is one, and James Hunt.
Yeah.
They have to be dead as well, so they can't libel. come at us. There's a theme.
Yeah, that's good.
But it was fun to sort of imagine that and go, that probably wouldn't make it in the show, but it's nice to have that, you know, the voice of Julian. When we were doing the audiobook, it was like a lot of fun to...
It's proper, because, you know, they're in jokes or like they're allusions to things from the series without stating what they are and, you know, things where... In the series, we know what really happened, but in the book, we don't know.
I think there's like Mary doing wicker basket sort of, you know, lessons and stuff.
Yeah, it's a good dense book.
That
fans of this show will love. You know, and I think somebody who hadn't watched the show. It might be a bit much.
It would be a bit weird, yeah. You go, this is rubbish. I don't know what these are all about. But, I don't know. Maybe they would.
Luckily, everyone's seen the show. So I think it's a perfect Christmas gift. How much does it cost?
£175.
£20.
Is it?
Yeah, that's the same as the hardback of Can I Have My Ball Back? The paperback's £11. So, you know, if you want to save some money. Also, my book will save lives, which I'm not sure this book will. I mean, maybe it'll stop people getting shot through the neck with arrows.
Cautionary tales. You know, take care in sex games. Yeah. That you have a safe word.
Yeah.
You know,
but
very important.
Look, really, it's a really really fun read, and it's beautiful. Look, I'll show these excited audience what it looks like inside. It's like, look at that.
There's Plain Sailing. There's me on my yacht.
It's like a Sunday Times.
Yeah.
Feature lovely handwritten things, and you know, everything looks like it's been aged correctly. So whoever the design team, as annoying as you were to them, have done a fantastic job.
Yeah, they did. Beautiful. Great.
It's a lovely thing. So yeah, go out and buy that. Job done. All right.
Lovely Christmas present.
Lovely Christmas present
for yourself and for other people.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
But look, there's loads I want to touch on. On the way back from Leeds, I re-watched the documentary you did about...
Yeah.
The discovery of the body of Richard III, which I'd forgotten that you were right in the middle of. I mean, you were right there when it all happened. And it's it's on all four. You can watch it now. It's absolutely fascinating.
It was a really weird sort of time in my life where I accidentally became a documentary presenter.
Yeah.
And I really didn't mean to at all. I remember it was... I think I'd... This is before my wife, and with, but I had a girlfriend and we'd split up and I was a bit sad or something. And then my agent phoned and went, do you want to go to Leicester? And I went, yeah, before she'd even finished.
That's how bad things have become.
That's how bad it was. And I went, what, it's a hotel? Yeah. Two nights? Yeah. I'm in. What is it? And then they said, it's a dig for sort of E4 or something. And they think they might know where Richard III is buried. And I went, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. And I went, so do they? And he went, no, they don't. But they're going to talk about it and they're going to have a dig. There's going to be a dig and they probably won't find it. But do you want to go and just sort of, because of horrible histories and like, you know, your connection. And they want someone who might be funny.
Yeah.
And I went, well, I'll give it a go. So I went there and then on the first day, they dug this trench and then there was a bone sticking out of the one side of the trench. And I went, turn the camera on. I thought, this is going to be... And I went, we've got him. We've found him. And the director was going, listen, that's not actually how you sort of do it. And I thought, well, I thought it was supposed to be funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And like that was... And he went, yeah, but that's not him. And I went, yeah, but that... I think that might be funny. And we're going, anyway, let's just not... Anyway, it was him. And it was so bizarre because they went... Like, they dug some other trenches, and then I sort of got a call at night going, they think, actually, like, they're going to dig out that bone you've had, the first bone. Yeah. And, like, somebody did a... They did a... One of the maths group at Leicester did a... I don't know how they do this. You know, you probably guess I'm not a mathematician. But they went... They discovered that the chances of us finding that... body, that first bone that they found, on top of everything else, was something like 4 billion to 1, or something that you dig a hole and find Richard III.
Yeah.
Because it was so vague, all the, you know, if you've seen it, Philippa, who was the sort of mastermind behind it, just had a hunch and there was an R in the car park and she was going, I feel like this is, he's here. I was going, there's an R, and I was going, I think that's a reserved. And she went, it is for reserved, it is, but it is also for Richard.
Well, it's so interesting because it felt to me like, you know, maybe, I mean, this might be way off, but it felt like maybe the production team thought, well, do a funny show about, you know, it'd be interesting, but we'll get someone like, the come dine with me man to come in and be a little bit sarcastic over the top and we'll be slight because they're kooky, okay? The people, the Ricardians are a kooky group of people, as it turns out, geniuses. But they're you know, it's funny for lots of reasons as well as being amazing. So like just the bit where they're transporting the box from the grave, the box with the bones from the grave to the van, and Philippa says we should, you know, we want to do something, you know, we want to put the standard on top. And the guy who runs it says that's fine. But then she asks one of the scientists to carry it and says, no, I don't feel comfortable doing that because we don't know it is. So she won't do it. So the historian guy goes, yeah, I'll give it a go. I'll give it, and then gets the flag and sort of waves. Philippa's got it all nicely folded up to put on top. He goes, puts on top. And they're trying to be so respectful, and they are. It's sort of this wonderful balance. Do you know what I mean? It's just, there's so much going on in this documentary.
Sort of, let's just remember it's a dead person.
But this
is totally,
it's amazing.
It was very surreal. And when they sort of discovered, they dug out that bone that we found on the first day, and then we went and did some other ones, and then because then it blew up. So what happened was, it was 2 days, and then we went, right, we've sort of got something here, and then the whole sort of team was fired, like who would in this brutal sort of. So the cameraman went and sort of everyone and these award winning documentary makers came in, but they still kept me. And so it just blew up, and then it was like, it's not, you know, it's Channel 4 now, and it's going to be a big... and then, you know, there was the skeleton with the curvature and Philippa sort of going, you know, it can't have been a hunchback. Yeah. It can't have been like that. as young, but I thought you were like, it doesn't matter, you know, it was, it, I mean, it was so, yeah, it was so bizarre. Was, she was sort of in love with him.
Yeah, know? Yeah. I mean, the Ricardians were like trying to, if you don't know, at all, trying to say that the historical vision of him is wrong, that his enemies made it up. They made up the deformities. They made up all of this stuff.
She was going, I went, who do you think he is like? And she went, Daniel Craig.
So she is in love with him. And it's sort of amazing that she's vindicated. Not only is he there, he's in the exact spot she said it would be. She found him straight away. She was the one trying to direct them back to get it. And then she's sort of so conflicted by the thing that sort of proves that initially that it's him.
Yeah.
And she's going, no, he can't. And the others are coming going, no, no, it can't be. He can't have curvature of the spine. It's not him. So it's like
there's so many things going on for her. It was quite sort of painful to watch. She was also going, because he was really brave. He was the last king to die in battle.
Yeah.
And he really, he went straight off, you know, when the others stayed behind and he was on his horse actually fighting. Like, it was a pretty brave thing.
Yeah.
So she was going, okay, so he had curvature of the spine. But that means he's even more brave to do what he didn't understand. He's like, not, didn't even look like Daniel Craig. So imagine a little guy, you know, like Ronnie Corbett or someone going in, and that's even more brave. So she was doing that, but then she was going, but I'm devastated. And they're going to laugh at us. They're all going to laugh at us because the Shakespeare version was right. And she couldn't bear that. But then she's going, but yet. So she was all over the shop.
It was. I mean, amazing. It's very conflicting. But that's it's absolutely, the whole thing's fascinating. The fact that, you know, it's to be there in such an amazing moment. You know, I'm so jealous of just that, the fact that you were there. It's such an incredible bit of luck.
It was a bit of luck for me, and it was a natural thing for me to be interested in. As I say, unfortunately, they sort of they gave me another job. After that,
right.
Which was called Man versus Weird, where I went around looking for people with superpowers. Because they went, this guy, like, he won loads of awards, and they went, this guy's the new presenter. And they offered me quite a lot of money, and I went, oh, maybe this is what I'm going to do now. Maybe I'm going to do this. And then I was really terrible. And the producer was going, what's wrong with you? You can't. And I went, look, the Richard III thing I was interested in, and this is just all like phony people who pretend think they can fly, and they obviously can't. You know, but you have to be you know, enthusiastic. And I was going, well, I can't be enthusiastic about something. So it sort of went wrong, and then I stopped. Now I'm not a presenter anymore.
Okay. Well, I think that's good though. Because you can't top that. No. Except, of course, I don't know if you mentioned it to her, but you. Presumably, subsequently, met Richard III's great-great-great-great-great-great... Well, I don't know if she's in exact relation to him, but you met you worked with...
Oh, yes, speaking with of royalty. Queen. Yeah, I hadn't made that connection. That was a nice sort of segue.
You could have said to her, you know,
I met your great-great, and she just said, oh, no.
Not related.
No, not related. No, they probably wouldn't be, because Henry... Because that was a Plantagenet, and then it was Henry VII...
They'll be related somewhere back there, don't you worry. There'll be something, but yeah, I don't...
I mean, if you go back far enough, you know...
They were all fucking each other, though. So, I mean, back in the day, I'm not talking about Queen Elizabeth II.
My God.
I wouldn't dare. But, you know, not many actors can say they've acted alongside... I mean, you and Daniel Craig, isn't it?
It's all about Craig. It's all about me and Daniel Craig. We're like peas in the pod. that was a very special thing to be part of. Yeah, that was sort of part of history, you know, and great to be there. And people always say to me, were you in the same room? Because they did film it in such a way that it made it look like I'd sort of been CGI. Yes. But I was in the same room. It was quite a day. We did have one conversation that I think I'm allowed to talk about because we haven't been allowed to talk about it.
Yeah.
There was just a massive, like, you do not discuss this. Who wrote it? Who came up with it? It's the Queen's thing.
Yeah.
And you go, Paddington was in it as well. And like, they go, but... Which was, and it sort of was okay in the end because I had sort of journalist part on my doorstep, you know, sort of daily, sort of knocking on my door and asking me what, because it was just such a big news thing.
Yeah.
But I did. There was one conversation where then I think I can say. Well, I'm going to say it anyway.
Say it. What's the harm?
And she, because it's a bit where she goes. Apparently, she says, "I keep a marmalade." Do you remember? Have you seen this? Yes. You've all seen it. And she says, "I keep a marmalade sandwich under my hat. I keep it for emergencies." And she goes, "Oh, I keep mine. So do I." She says, "I keep mine in here and as a handbag." I don't know if you remember this. Mm-hmm. But she kept going like, "So do I," like a Nazi commandant, you know. This is when I realised I definitely shouldn't have started this one. But she was going, and the director would come in, Adam, lovely guy, and go, "Mom, could you just be a bit gentler on that?" And she'd be so sweet. She'd go, "I'm so sorry. Yes, of course. Of course, yes." And then, action. "So do I." And then he'd go, "No, dude, like, it's not like you're talking to your grandchildren." And she goes, "Oh, of course. I'm so sorry." And "So do I." And then eventually, like I was saying to him, I was saying, "Give up. You just stop because we're not going to get it." And he was going, "No, I think just a couple more." And eventually, I think she just got tired and just went, "So do I." And it was really sweet. Yeah. And it was lovely. And then everyone was relieved. And then I needlessly just went up to her and went, "Mom, that was fantastic." And she went, "Oh, thank you." And I went, "You're a very good actress." And she went, "Well, of course, I do it all the time." Right? And I went, "Oh, you mean like playing the part of the queen, you know?"
Yeah.
And she went, "I beg your pardon?" and then I lost all my confidence, you know. Because I thought she was giving me this scoop, like it's a part, you know, like a role. And I went, "Oh." And I said, and she went, "Beg your pardon?" And I went, "Oh, I mean like it's a role, isn't it? The queen, and you play it." And she went, "No, you know I am the queen." And I went, yeah. And you went, "They're all, Paddington's not real. He's not real. And they're actors. But I'm the queen." I went, "No, I know. I thought you were saying." And she went, "No, I meant at Christmas when I do my speeches. But then it's all written down, you see, and now I have to remember it, and I find it quite hard." And I went, "Yeah, okay, that's fine." So that was my conversation.
That's amazing.
Beg your pardon?
Yeah. Wow.
There you go, a bit of history.
But it's, you know, again, what an incredible thing. And because of the timing of all that, Paddington became so associated with the Queen. It was all her, like, walking up to the pearly gates with Paddington as if he was going with her.
It's got to be the most British thing. when the palace said, "Can people please stop bringing marmalade sandwiches?" And people, more came, like it, yes, times it by 100. "Oh, I think I'll go and take some more." "Oh, that's a good idea." "No," they said, "don't do that." "Yeah, but it's Britain. You do what you feel is right."
But then also, you know, you're so heavily, I mean, it's just, you're so heavily involved in so many of these, like, massive cultural things. And so Paddington himself is, you know, is, you're responsible for, in the first Paddington film, it being a PG rather than a U.
That is correct, yes.
So well done for that.
Well, I think there's got to be things for the parents as well. I mean, it's like Ghosts. You've got to put in a few.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that part was very tiny. And I said to Paul, "I think I'm going to blow it up and have a sort of... a really weird sort of relationship with a cleaning lady."
Yeah.
But it worked, and then he did it again, and then he's in Paddington 3 as well.
Right.
Same guy. Probably not allowed to say that either. and the same guy sort of in Wonka as well.
Right.
Coming up. So he's now straddling universes.
That's good. Well, then. But so was that what you had sort of chipped in ideas to do in the first one, and then the second one you were the co-writer?
So Paul King, who directed, wrote and directed the first one, is you know, one of my best friends, and he went, "Can you come and sort of help out?" We'd done a little film called Bonnie and the Bull, which was very low budget, and we'd sort of done that together, and he went, come and, you know, do some jokes. And it was sort of my apprenticeship, really, into sort of seeing if, proving to David Heyman, who's, you know, big producer, did all the Harry Potters, that I could be of value, you know. And then when it was a success and two came along, David said, oh, you two write it together, and we did Paddington 2.
Yeah. So many people, like when I said you were coming on, said, can you say thank you to him for Paddington 2?
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, it's yeah. I'm sure you know that in the unbearable weight of massive talent, the Nicolas Cage film, the gangster is a massive fan of, I can't remember who plays it, but
Has anyone seen this film? It's really great,
yeah.
Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And Nicolas Cage is going, no way, man, Paddington 2 is going. And he goes, I remember this because me and Paul actually, people think it's sort of, it is a bit of fun, but they go, have you seen, and we go, yeah, it's like, it was so nice, we were really touched by it, and like, we felt like, more than anything in a way, that we'd achieved, we'd gone into a sort of another, a sort of meta level, that we were in movies where gangsters, sort of like Tarantino or something, you know, and yeah, Pedro Pascal, he says, Paddington 2 is, what does he say? He goes, it made me want to be a... He said, I cried from start to finish. It made me want to be a better human being. And Nick Cage goes, no fucking way. And then it hard cuts to them watching the end of Paddington 2. And Nick Cage is crying his eyes out. And he goes, man, Paddington 2 is beautiful. And Pedro Pascal goes, I fucking told you.
But it's absolutely true as well. It's a perfect, again, perfect family film. It's so beautiful. I mean, Paul is an absolutely fantastic director.
He's amazing.
You know, the direction is beautiful. But, you know, the performance you get out of Hugh Grant is terrific as well.
Yeah. Paddington's wrote that for him. That character was called Hugh Grant in the script. And we had to change it when we sent it to him. Originally, it was Phoenix Bar. Do you remember the Phoenix Bar? Did you ever go to the Phoenix Bar?
Yeah, of course.
It's on. I passed it on the way down. Yeah. It was a real trip down memory lane. And it was called. He was called Phoenix Bar. And we thought that was a funny, because we used to go to the Phoenix Bar when we were young.
Yeah.
And before we had kids. And then David Heyman went, it's a bit of a weird name, Phoenix Bar. Like, so we changed it to Buchanan. But then Hugh Grant read it and, yeah, he said... a self-centered, pompous actor. What made you think of me? And then he went, I'll do it. He sort of joking, he sort of says it's the best film he's ever been in sometimes.
I think, but you know, he's awesome in it. But as are all the prison guys, you know, all the guys in the prison.
Brendan Gleeson we had, yeah.
Yeah, it's an incredible cast.
Yeah,
and but the characterization is so beautiful. I think so. The bad guy is there's still something lovable about Hugh Grant within all of that. I think, and you know, and
yeah,
it's about not judging people by
exactly
their appearance,
and we're all redeemable in some ways, and Hugh Grant's song at the end is Rain on the Roof. That was the only song I've ever sung. It was at a drama school and I did a musical. I'm not very, very musical. And I sang that song. And so Paul went, I don't know what. And he just went, you should sing a song at the end. I said, it should be Rain on the Roof from Follies. And that's a sangy song. That's the song he sang. It was just really odd. And sort of one of my people I was at drama school with went, did you chose that? And went, yeah, it was just the only song I knew. Literally the only musical song. But it sort of worked, you know.
Yeah, it does.
I think he did the choreography. Who does Strictly? What's his name? The big one. The Darling. That one.
Craig Revel Hall.
Craig did that.
How did I know that? I don't even watch it.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Font of knowledge.
Yeah. Well, look, because you know, so all these, and even going back to, and I watch Horrible Histories also much. So I watch Paddington with my family. I watch all these things. Ghosts of my family. Horrible Histories. My daughter was blown away when I told her you were the same guy as Julian in the stupid death.
Oh, really?
The stupid deaths. Thing,
right.
Which is, stupid deaths is just such an awesome thing. Do you worry that you're going to die in a stupid way?
Yeah, do you know what? I do. I can't remember, but it has flashed through my brain a few times when I've nearly done something stupid. I used to be more reckless than I am, but I'd go, I think I was drunk once up Table Mountain in South Africa, and I was sort of messing around on the ledge.
Right.
Going, woo! And then I went, oh, God, this would be a really bad way to go. And people would go, he had a stupid death. But weirdly, that little-known fact about stupid death. So we all used to come up with voices and stuff. And for these characters, I think everyone had sort of had a go. No one really knew how to do that character. Because quite often in horrible histories, it's funny because we do them like normal people. So, like, you know, Nero would be like a bank manager or Socrates would be like, hi, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, Socrates here. But this needed to be something different.
Yeah.
And no one quite knew what to do. But I'd had a voice from a failed character I'd done in a show called Blunder for Channel 4.
Oh, yes, yes.
Right? Which no one will... We're probably even less famous than Greg Banfield. It was just a mess of a show, but I did a character who was like a devil. He was the devil. And somebody would go like, oh, I wish I was good at darts, like a darts play, you know, I've lost, yeah. I'd sell my soul to the devil to be good at darts. And then this guy would appear, poof, and he was he'd really dressed like quite ferociously, and he'd go, just sign here, like this. And then he would talk like this, you know, and I have quite a big, you know, and that's what I thought the devil would sound like.
Yeah.
I said a funny devil. Yeah. And then he'd go, right, darts. Okay, so this is how you do it. And then he'd show them, and then he'd go, oh, this is hard. This is really hard. And he could never do it. And we did it, like, he did a few of them, you know, and they were a bit odd, you know. I thought they were hilarious, but nobody else did. And anyway, so I was like, I really like that voice. And then so that became... I went, well, I could do it like this. And he was always laughing. And that was his thing. We'd be like this. Like, oh, that really is stupid. And so I got to use that voice, you know. Yeah. So never chuck things away.
No. And it's, you know, but again, out of everything in that show, I think it's everything's so good in that show, in Horror Whisperers. It is like that memorable character, I think.
It always is a one that... Like at service stations, I don't know why this happens. I don't know if you have this, but service stations, like, what are you doing here? Like, people feel like they can come and... And a guy wants his son, who's going, do the dance for the boy. Like that. And I went, no, I can't. Like, I had my daughter, who was about three or something, and I went, I'm not going to do that. He goes, do the dance. I went, what do you mean? He went, that, do the that. And I went, no, I can't. He went, and then the kid started crying. He went, now you made the boy cry. Do the dance. And so I just went... But it's just one of those things people like...
I mean, if he'd killed you, that would have been perfect, wouldn't it? Yeah. Stupid death man refusing. Dies refusing to do the stupid death stuff.
Beaten to death in Top Gear magazine. Because it was W.H. Smith's. I should have said that. But yeah, really stupid death.
And you nearly got Horrible Histories taken off the air due to your Scottish accent that you did.
Wow. How do you... Who's told you this?
I know everything. Well, I can't believe this show still goes on and I do my Scottish accent all the time. And I go to Scotland and people still love me up there.
This is a great bit of knowledge. Yeah. How do you know that?
I know everything about you.
Because that's something we joke about because there was very few complaints. But I did... It was a sketch about medieval Scotland, and the punchline was, that's the way we do things in medieval Scotland. And I decided... So it would be like the kid would have, you know, a cut on his leg and someone would urinate on it and it would go, it's true, the rat would go, it's true. In medieval, you know, Scotland, they, you know, urine was seen as a cure for it like that. But then I would turn to camera... And I was just supposed to go, that's it. And I would get, and I, for some reasons known only to myself, well, I knew why it was. I was trying to make Jim and Martha laugh. And I crossed my eyes and I went, well, that's the way we do things in medieval Scotland. Because I crossed my eyes, which is a brave move, And of course, everyone laughed like they do here. And they went, great, that's great, let's keep it. And then it went out, and then all of Scotland complained. We are not Crusade people who... And it was just... but it, I thought it was funny, you know. It's not the worst thing he could sure, do, is it? Yeah. Yeah. But good knowledge.
Thank you. This is my favourite thing about horrible histories that I'm going to tell you, that I discovered in my research. In 2021, The Sun had an article called Horrible Histories Cast, Where Are They Now?
Really?
Which, I mean, the answer was, they're all doing ghosts.
What? BBC What's One's right? top six.
What's going on?
Where are they now?
Where are they?
In 2021.
In 2021, it wasn't even like, you know, just before Ghosts. So you is you.
Was this a cross-eyed Scotsman did this? No.
So that was one of my favourite things I found out. God. Look, there's so much more I want to talk to you about. We've got to talk about detectorists and, again, show-stealing cameo, really. It's not as a small part, but... That is a dream. I mean, it's a brilliant, another brilliant sitcom. Everything you do is fantastic. You get into all these fantastic things.
Well, I can't claim any. Mackenzie, I used to do sort of stuff with Mackenzie. I mean, you remember Mackenzie back in the day.
Yeah.
Charlie Cheddar or whatever. What was his name?
Charlie Cheese.
Charlie Cheese.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah.
And he'd do, and Mr. Bagshaw.
Yeah.
And we had the same agent and used to hang out a lot. And he just went, he's obviously writing this Simon and Garfunkel part. Who looks a bit like or has hair that could be similar to Art Garfunkel?
Yeah.
And so he chose me. And it was like a holiday that. It was like, but Toby Jones always used to go, he's a lucky fucker, Mackenzie. Because the sun always shined when he was shooting.
Right.
Because he'd direct it as well. And he was so relaxed. And he'd be like, you'd go, got any notes on that? And he'd go, I just saw a kestrel. Yeah, but have you got any notes? You go, and then you go, oh no, it's fine, just do it again. Because we were in the countryside and he was, and he's a birder, he's a twitcher or whatever they're called, and he spent half the time just looking at birds. Yeah. And the sun was always shining, we all stayed in the same hotel, and it was like a holiday. I used to text Paul, who played Paul Simon, he's called Paul, and I go, we're going on holiday again. Looks like we're going on holiday again this year. And he'd go, yeah, great. So it was, really fun, yeah.
Yeah, it's very nice. And I you know, obviously you've been involved with the Mighty Boosh for a while and early on and a little bit of a similarity to Julian Barrett, which you've used throughout a few works. But I really loved Mindhorn.
Oh, great. Oh, thanks,
Which you wrote with Julian, right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. Yeah, has anyone seen Mindhorn? Blimey, that's everyone that went to the cinema to see it.
I mean, it didn't become like... I mean, it's one of those British films you think this should be like a smash. It's got a great cast, it's got an amazing cast. It doesn't feel like it permeated
through.
We
thought it was going to be a bit bigger than it was. It's just hard to get people to go into the cinemas, I suppose, to see films.
Barbie did okay.
But Barbie wasn't about a sort of semi-Bergerac-like detective from the Isle of Man.
That might have been the mistake you made.
But I think that's the problem. I think that's, without getting into it, you know, it's like, it's all things you know now. Yeah. Like, Barbie is things you know. And they're picking, let's do a Super Mario Brothers, because everyone knows that is a computer game. So, and you go, oh, I'll go and see that, but Mindhorn, I don't know that.
No.
Yeah, well, it's new. It's a new idea. Ah, no. I don't like new things. This is the cinema guy. I'm the cinema guy.
I mean, if it's you saying that, then that's a really bad...
I'm going to offend all the cinema going. I didn't do cross-eyed.
Well, I would say to people, if you haven't seen it, check it out, because it's really good fun. You know, they've got Kenneth Branagh in it, haven't you? There's also this
weirdly, it's bigger in America because it was on cinema release here, and then you sort of had to buy it. And in America, it was on Netflix, so it's on.
Okay.
It went straight onto Netflix America, and I went to New York shortly after it was on, and all the young people. It's like Withnail and I in in New York, like all the students and sort of stones go, "Hey man, it's Clive. Hey Clive, hey Julia Jackson, Julia." And so they were all mad for it. Yeah.
Right.
So I should go and live in America, really.
But, you know, you've got this... I mean, I asked you backstage, I asked you a flippant question, but you have got, you know, you've got this amazing career where you're doing all these acting jobs and so much writing. So the Wonka we haven't really touched upon, but you've written the Wonka film as well. The Phantom of the Open, which is a terrific film as well, and really a really great idea for a film, and people should check again, but with an extraordinary cast in it as well.
Yeah.
You know, it must feel like, you must feel like this is the, you know, dreams come true. This really have thought it was
you know, going to end up like this.
Well, you kind of think this. I'd love that. You know, that's what you start to agree. Oh, wouldn't it be great if I'm writing films that are in the most popular sitcom in the?
I would have taken that. yes, true. And I'm very lucky to have had like Phantom of the Open and Mindhorn. And I put sort of Bill in that as well, sort of Bill, you know, with Ben and Larry wrote.
Yeah.
Like, they're sort of indie films that you would make anyway, like you and your mates.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just lucky to get them into cinemas, you know, which is a feat in itself.
It really is.
So I'm lucky to have that, the sort of, that indie side of things where you can go, let's see how this goes, and it doesn't matter if it, no one goes to see it. And then there's, you know, Paddington and sort of Wonka, which is a bit more pressure because someone's given you $150 million. And you go, what? Why? Don't do that.
That's not your fee, right, though. That's to make the whole film.
And then you got 50 quid to make the rest. No, and it's a big studio film. It's worldwide. And it's like, you know, so I'm lucky to have experienced those. Yeah. Those two things, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's great, but and also to shows that bring so much joy and pleasure to people. I think that's so special because it's, you know, and again, I think that family thing, and you know, the most of it is family friendly, and I just think that is so extraordinarily difficult to get to pitch that right. And I think in a way that the UK Ghosts pitches it exactly right, whereas I think the US Ghosts is a bit too adult for the family, even though my daughter does love it, but she doesn't understand the rude bit. Have to try and explain around more rude bits in the US one. But, you know, there's a sort of warmth there. And you play such sort of dodgy and unpleasant...
I'm always the most adult bit in it.
You're always the most adult and the most sort of seedy, weird bit in it.
I know, because we did Yonderland as well, which we haven't mentioned, but Yonderland... have you seen Yonderland? Yonderland was the same gang, you know.
Yeah.
And again, like you say, it was family, and it is quite hard to do, but we just sort of enjoy it, really, and go, let's not alienate anyone. Let's not, you know, push anyone away. But even in that, I spend most time with my clothes off.
Yeah.
Let's just all... What was the catchphrase? Let us disrobe. Let us take off these... What is it? Let us cast off these cumbersome robes.
But do you regret... I mean, there's a lot of... I've noticed that there's a lot of outside scenes in Ghosts. So you're outside a lot.
Yeah.
And you've got no trousers on.
Yeah. You can see us shivering. Look closely. Me and Jim. I do go, why the fuck? Why did I do this? But then when it's inside and there's all the hot lights are on, look who's happy then.
Well, look, I've barely scratched the surface. I haven't even met you. You're an ex-wing pilot?
Ah, yes, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. My starring role in Star Wars.
Star Wars.
That was weird. That was when I was writing Paddington 2 and they called and I went, Paul, do you mind if I go and do some acting for a day? And he went, absolutely, you are not doing that. We were right under the cosh. Then I went, it's Star Wars. And he went, yeah, you can go. And then I bumped into Paul Putner. You know Paul Putner?
Yeah, I do. He's the Curious Orange.
You know Paul Putner. And I'm really pleased. And I'm in my X-Wing uniform. And then Paul, the most unlikely man I would if I was put in a Star Wars movie. All right, Simon. Like that. You have to know him really to find out. Sort of alienated half the audience. But it was a really, take it from me, it was a really funny moment. You can imagine.
I can.
Richard can imagine.
I can imagine. Well, but, you know, but again, most actors would be happy if they'd just got a little part in Star Wars and that was...
Well, I didn't... It was the smallest part in the world.
Yeah.
They sat in the X-Wing and they read... they read lines into my ear. So there were all the possible lines and there's a big battle. And so there's someone in your ear going, okay, so there's the Death Star is coming now. You've seen the Death Star and you're amazed. You're amazed. How am I supposed to work off this? There's just a, no, don't open your eyes. That's too much. Like, that's too little. Why are you doing that? And then, because they said, they go, it was Garth. Who was it? Anyway. And they said, you've got to, we want it to be funny, you know, we want it to be funny.
Yeah.
And so they're going, okay, so the line is now switching deflector shields to on, like that. And then I went, switching deflector shields to on. Like that. And you go, what are you doing? I was going, well, I thought it would be funny if I did it like a Virgin Atlantic Airlines. No, don't do that. And I went, okay, so you don't want it funny at all. Just say it. Switching deflector shields to one. Okay, fine. And then, so then the line I had was, well, someone tell me, what was it? We won't have long. No, we don't have long. The portal opens, we have to dive in. And I go, we don't have long. And that's my line. They should have had switching. But that's their loss.
Sounds very much like the experience the Queen had working with you. So, you know, acting's more difficult than it looks, isn't it?
Yeah, just goes to show. You know. It's tough. Acting is tough.
Oh, and look, we're going to wind up. But I haven't even mentioned The Persuasionist. That was another of my possibles to talk about.
Why would you bring that up?
Because I bring it up
just to ruin it.
I want to bring that. I've had most of the cast of The Persuasionist on.
Have you?
I think so. I mention it quite a lot. I'd quite like to bring you all back together like it's Justin Lee Collins
you know
used
what?
To do it.
I'd love to, because we all are quite... The Persuasionist was... one of the most derided sitcoms of all time. Yeah. It was pulled off air on week two or something. They took it, or they pushed it back, and everyone went, where's that? Well, no one said, where's that gone? They just went, oh, thank God that's gone. And we all thought it was all right, you know. And Adam Buxton and Jared Christmas and Daisy Haggard. And when we get together, you know, we go, that was a weird experience, wasn't it? Because you don't make something and it's going to be shit. And it wasn't actually that shit.
No.
It just, like, got this reputation.
It's weird, isn't it? But, you know, that's it. It's weird that you have both, you know, by both sides of the coin, isn't it, I suppose? That, you know, because, like, getting a successful sitcom, there's a bit of luck in there. I think not necessarily in the cases of the Ghosts and the Detectorists, because, you know, they're so good, I think. But you still need to... Someone needs to back it. Someone needs to say, yeah, we'll go ahead and do it. And people need to watch it. And so things can disappear. And, you know, like, as I always say, The Office very nearly, you know, they showed it once and no one watched it. And then they repeated it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
hard. Usually, when you watch something for the first time, and you it's really hard, especially if it's got lots of characters, to go, oh, I love these characters. You just don't. It takes a while. We're all a bit suspicious. And it takes a while. For you to warm to them and to like them. So to pull it after Ep 2...
Yeah, it's not very...
I will tell you something, and I never told this story before, but a guy in... I was in a pub in the Cotswolds with my wife, and this guy comes... I went to the bar, and this guy went... I was in... and I recognised him. Joe, I think his name is. He went, we worked together. And I went, yeah, you're an actor, aren't you? He went, we did. Now, hang on... he went, we did The Detectorist together. And I went, yeah, I think we did, yeah. And he went, fucking hell, how did that get another series? I like, what, that was so shit. No, that's it. He said, that was so shit, that show. And I went, what? Detectorist. And he went, yeah. And I went, well, it got another series. That got another series. And I went, yeah, I think it won a BAFTA. Like, he went, that won a that pile of shit won a BAFTA. And I went, yeah. And he went, fucking hell, like that. And I went up to the guy and I went, I just met this guy. He said he was in The Detectorist with me. You're really having a fucking go at it. Then he came out and went, I'm so sorry. It was The Persuasionist. And I went, yes. And then I recognised him. We sat down and I went, I don't know what. I just, in my mind went, of course, we were at these cross purposes. Won a BAFTA. That won a fucking BAFTA.
They only showed two episodes. They had to take it off because it was so good. It was too good. People were dying from how fantastic.
The only show to win a BAFTA, having been pulled after the first episode.
Oh, man. Look, as I said, there's a million things we could talk about with you, and maybe we will another time. I will remind you, folks at home, to buy your ghosts for... is called Ghost the Button House Archives, to give it its full names, and it's absolutely fantastic. As is my guest this week, the incredible Simon Farnaby, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
You have been listening to Rahulastapur with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Simon Farnaby. Scant regard, provide the music. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker, also to Chris Evans, not that one, and all of his crazy little team he's got going on there. Thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. It was lovely to have you to be here and to have the audience here as well. Weren't they nice? Probably I'm doing this before we record. Maybe they were horrible. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.